There's nothing better than sports on a Sunday.
The return to glory.
It's time to kick off.
20, he will score!
Tip off.
Way downtown, bang, bang!
Or tee off.
They're going to go nuts when he hits this thing.
Yeah! On Sunday Huddle with Colin Russo, presented by Hard Rock Bet.
Back at it on a Monday edition of Sunday Huddle, presented by Hard Rock Bet, right here on ESPN 106.3. Colin Russo with you at the City Place Studios in downtown West Palm Beach. Joined across me is Cade Chalmers, and we haven't seen Cade in a while. Little vacation, a little wedding action up in Georgia. Cade's been bouncing around. I've been bouncing around. I was up in Boulder, Colorado, completing my half Ironman, my Ironman 70.3 in Boulder, Colorado on Saturday. Cade saw one of your good buddies get married, huh, Cade?
Yeah, an old high school friend of mine who I've been best friends with for years, finally marrying the love of his life. And I'm still giddy about it, Colin. It was on Saturday. I was in the wedding, and it was a really beautiful moment. So super excited for him and his
family. Being in the wedding, I've never been in a wedding before.
Yeah, this was my first time.
And
it was a great and amazing experience. 9 groomsmen, one of the largest one of the largest wedding parties I've seen. But an amazing, solid group of guys. We did a little bit of a bachelor party earlier in the week, so I really got to know everyone. I knew a few of them beforehand, but most of them were new to me. And so just to being around those guys, celebrating my friend, it was a really amazing experience.
All right, interesting. I've never been in a wedding before, so I'm curious. Like, there's a responsibility attached, but it's also like you're honored, right? Like, it's an honorary position, and it really is, because you're just happy to be there and support. But it's not like just showing up to the wedding. You're a part of it.
I stayed around, helped out, cleaned up. I was there early to help set up and get things ready for him and his family, because it's a lot of responsibilities on both of the families as well. The parents are completely high strung, high stressed the entire week, making sure everything is looking right. So I was just there for not only him, but also the families, making sure everyone is enjoying the moment, right? You don't want to build up this entire anticipation, this entire event, and then just have it go away and you were still stressed about everything. I wanted them to just sit back, enjoy the moment. So I took on a few other responsibilities as well. And I was even still able to enjoy the moment. So it was really, really incredible.
That's all you could ask for. That's all you could ask for. That's good to hear. Well, Cade, we got a lot to talk about today. More importantly, we had the U.S. Open, the 125th U.S. Open over at Oakmont Country Club. The final round yesterday. J.J. Spawn, our Cognizant Classic hero, guys, had a good season himself. Was minus one, finished with a 60-foot putt to win the whole thing. And emphatic ending. The weather was awful. Rain delays. The whole weekend, the course just tuned up the golfers. Cade, your reaction, number one, to J.J. Spawn winning in the way he did, that comeback-style victory. But number two, your perspective on a course like that, tuning up the golfers to the level that we saw over the weekend.
I mean, super happy for J.J. I mean, you think back about everything he's gone through this year, second place at the Cognizant Classic. He lost in that heartbreaking fashion to Rory McIlroy in a playoff where it was kind of his own fault. I mean, he was the one who kind of blew it. It wasn't necessarily that Rory outdid him.
It was
J.J. was the one who put it in the water on 17 on the playoff, and that's something that he's going to have to live with. But this is something that's going to definitely help out a lot with that loss. It's super exciting to see someone go through what he did in those first six holes, which was 5 bogeys in the first six holes, a nightmarish start when you think at the beginning of the day, you're in this, you've got this, you have a chance, you're just a few off the lead. To start off like that, you can feel what the tension was like in the moment, but then it's very interesting how all of the announcers were kind of having JJ's back too. Like, hey, this could be his reset when they had that hour and a half rain delay right before. I think he was on 9, mm-hmm. I believe the hole was that he was on. And it just legit was a perfect halftime break for him because I believe he shot 3 or 4 under the rest of the day. So super happy for him. He has had a ridiculously long career with not a whole lot of success. I believe he's had 1 PGA Tour victory besides this in 2022. But he's been a pro for over 10 years. And this is definitely his breakthrough moment. He is now exempt for all majors for the next 5 years and for the U.S. Open for the next 10 years. So he's got his PGA Tour card for the next 5 years. In a dark moment last year where he said after the tournament, like, I legit thought I was going to lose my job. And now he's set for the next 5 years. $4.3 million paycheck goes a long way as well. Your second question about the course conditions. I love how we get this type of tournament once in a blue moon. This is not the golf I want to watch every Sunday, but you get a moment where the course claps back at the golfers. Like, I'll be honest, I didn't necessarily love seeing Scottie Scheffler score a 30 under par, whatever he did a few weeks ago.
True.
I wanted this moment where we saw true golf form. Can you hit a fairway when you have to? Can you hit a green when you have to?
Can you do it in tough conditions?
Can you do it in the conditions? Can you do it with the pressure? Can you do it with all eyes watching you? That's golf. That is where the pressure meets the skill, meets the talent, and they're not getting lucky. You either miss or you go. You hit or you don't. And that's the type of golf I loved seeing on Sunday.
Yeah, the thing about it is I'm a bit both sides on it. When it's the end of the round, the end of the final round, and you're more focused on how the weather is impacting the play, I don't know. There was a, without the JJ Spawn heroics, I don't know what my perspective on that final round would have been. And I think we were very lucky that we had a finish like that with him specifically to make it a fun story and entertaining finish, because everybody else was essentially in free fall. As everybody else, Sam Burns and Adam Scott specifically, just like complete meltdowns at the final round. And you almost can't blame them. But the other side of it, and Christian Catt, who told me this on Russo and Rizzo earlier today, which I kind of agree with, is there's a level of humanization that comes with this. Once in a while, you're right. The 20 under, it's hard to compare. It's hard if you're a amateur golfer, if you're myself who, you know, can't hit a fairway or something like that, and you're watching these pros, you're in awe, but it's unrelatable because these guys are just so good and so mistake-free. When you see these guys screw up on their drives or their approach shots or they can't find a green, they can't navigate a green at all, you almost think, you're like, I recognize that. That looks like, you know, my round on Saturday. You know, that I think, like you said, once every blue moon, I think that gives a little bit of a palate cleanser to what how good these golfers are, but more importantly, how greatness can look so not average. You know, it's impressive what they're doing, but it looked average based on what we're used to.
It's kind of what do you want to cheer for? Do you want to cheer for two guys who have been lighting up this golf course and you're waiting for one of them to choke? Or are you want to cheer? Do you want to cheer for a field that's been struggling and has been grinding and you're waiting for one of them to break out and make that birdie, make that putt? That's the type of tournament I want to cheer for. Because I'll be honest, I actually enjoyed I know the characters were different and Rory is an easier story to cheer for, but I enjoyed watching the actual golf of yesterday's tournament rather than the Masters.
Really?
The Masters was who's going to choke first because everyone's doing well. This one was who's going to step up and make that birdie to stand alone.
Because everybody is falling apart.
Yes, I want to see someone win because they did something well, not because another person did something wrong. Imagine if at the Masters, the playoff and Rory's 18th or Rory's 72nd hole were flipped, where Rory won the tournament on the 72nd hole because he made the birdie to get ahead of Justin Rose, rather than coming to the 72nd and missing his putt to have to go to a playoff, and that's when he makes his birdie because Justin Rose was farther away. The storyline and the heroics of Rory McIlroy would have almost immortalized him more if he had to make that putt on the 72nd in order to win the golf tournament. Like, if he makes that putt on the 72nd, it's everyone goes crazy. But because he missed, then you had to get that extra step of, okay, I guess he still won it anyways.
There's almost something, you're waiting for greatness instead of, all right, we're taking greatness for granted. You're waiting for that moment. Instead of, you're almost waiting for somebody to fall apart and the pressure to kind of encapsulate them. Where the other guys, yes, there's pressure, but nobody's really expecting you to have like a mind-numbing, awesome shot like JJ Spawn did on that final green. Nobody's expecting that because of how brutal these conditions are. Whereas the Masters, you're sort of waiting for that, like, who's going to have that excellent moment? And when is that who's going to have more excellent moments? You mentioned Rose. Rose put together an outstanding round, still didn't come out on top. So I agree with you on that sense that there is something fun about flipping it. And expect or being surprised by the greatness rather than be surprised by the collapse.
Yes.
It's a positive outlook. That's a positive outlook from Cade right there. Now, Cade, let's switch gears a little bit. U.S. Open yesterday. We're going to see JJ Spawn, the Ryder Cup. A lot to look forward to on that front. Baseball side of things. The Boston Red Sox. People compared it to the Luka trade of the MLB. I don't buy that specifically. But in terms of the surprise, this was probably as surprising as it gets. A fresh off a sweep of the New York Yankees, the Boston Red Sox essentially trade their best hitter, who is their leader in all basically major hitting categories, to the San Francisco Giants, as far as you could ship him away to a, not an uneventful, but a good team that you're not going to have to deal with as much. And they shipped him off and got nothing in return. This is not the first time the Red Sox have done something like this, but they shipped him off, and now we're going to see no more Devers with the Red Sox, right when the Red Sox are starting to play well. The biggest shock, I guess, to that Red Sox fan base, I think it's a personal slap in the face to the fans, because people want to talk about all the financial freedom because the San Francisco Giants are absorbing all that $250 million in contracts from Devers, and maybe Devers, the relationship was too irreparable. But it's a slap in the face to the fans when 6 weeks to the deadline, there's no contract dispute, the team is playing well, he's playing pretty well, people are starting to get healthy again, and we're going to ship him out on a moment's notice, fresh off a sweep of the Yankees. How to sour the mood of a fan base 101 by the Boston Red Sox. That was my takeaway after seeing that Devers trade.
Is there anyone still on this Red Sox team from the 2018 World Series team?
They let them all run.
Is there anyone still there? What? I am so confused why this would be the moment you need to take action. And it just goes to show for me how easily fed up front offices become with their players that they don't want to.
Yeah.
And you said it's not like the Luka trade. I agree with you when it comes to the superstar status of the player in question. But when it comes to the circumstances around it, it was almost a personal vendetta that the team wanted to show everyone how much power they have over a certain player that, hey, you don't think we can mess with you? We'll ship you across the country. Almost like a Luka-esque way where, hey, you think you have control here because you're this big shot guy when we don't really like you.
It was a power dynamics thing.
Yes. And another way that this is like the Luka trade is they didn't really shop him very much. Devers honestly could have gotten for a lot more than what they got out of him.
That's similar, yeah. So, and it was just like, wait, hold on. We didn't even throw him up on the market.
So what is it about these front offices that are so fed up with these players that they are willing to get rid of him for absolutely nothing just to have him out of the locker room? And what does this say for the other players in this locker room? I'm sure there's a lot more players in that locker room who honestly think that they are not as good as Devers. If they trip off the front office one way, are they going to get shipped immediately? What does that say about keeping the confidence in your roster if your best player is going to tickle you the wrong way and get shipped across the country?
Now, the one thing I would add to that is what I think it tells the players is if we pay you and we don't like how you're upholding your end of the contract, you are not protected to stay with the Boston Red Sox if you don't do something we like. They paid Devers. There's nothing wrong with Devers' bat, but they asked him to take a different spot in the field. They asked him to maybe take first base. They asked him maybe to replace a different player here, and he says, no, you want me to be a DH? I'm only going to be a DH. You're not going to get me back in the field. Maybe he's getting comfortable. Maybe he's trying to be petty. Whether he plays a position with the San Francisco Giants remains to be seen, but he was saying, I don't want to do this. The Red Sox, that obviously didn't sit well with them. He was very upfront about his feeling of being not valued, devalued by the Red Sox. Devalued, you're getting paid. They paid you $330 million. Devalued, please. But to the same token, the Red Sox clearly did not like the idea that he is outwardly speaking about his sense of value with the team. And more importantly, they're not happy about how he has been unwilling to help the team as best way he can by taking another spot in the field. Maybe that tells another player, hey, even if I get paid by this team, I still have to, you know, play ball. I don't necessarily operate in my own rules, maybe similar to other players in the MLB. And if I step on a toe or two, they're going to try to get me out of there. And just because I want to stay in Boston long-term, there's no guarantee that I'll be in Boston long-term. Now, that's no guarantee, another thing, to flip back once again, that Devers wanted to stay in Boston long-term at this point. Maybe Boston, he wanted out. Maybe he told them, I want out. Maybe there was if you can't find a way to make me feel more valued, get me out of here. But the idea that they did not get more out of this for somebody that you have, if an expensive team or a team with money can afford it, you could have gotten a haul for him. They have control over him. He is an elite bat. He's probably going to be he's going to be a good postseason bat. And now the Red Sox are sitting here post Mookie Betts and Rafael Devers with a handful of nothing in return. Jordan Hicks, they got Alex Verdugo, they got Kyle Harrison. They got a whole lot of nothing from either of those two trades. And this is not like the Red Sox are, you know, trying to, you know, liquidate themselves to stay wealthy. No. This is the Boston Red Sox we're talking about. This is not the Pittsburgh Pirates. This is not the Kansas City Royals. This is the Boston Red Sox. They should not necessarily be handcuffed financially. So I don't know what this tells the other players unless they wanted him out. But what I do know is what it tells the fans. And it tells the fans that we will not spend the amount of money that you think we need to spend in order to keep up with the Yankees of the world, the Red Sox of the world, even the Mets of the world. And that is why the Yankee fans now care more about playing the Dodgers and more about playing the Mets than they do the Red Sox.
I don't even know if you noticed what you just said right there, but you're talking about the Red Sox, and you just said the Yankees of the world, the Red Sox of the world, and the Mets of the world.
Oh, did I say? All right, yes. I meant Dodgers.
But the point is, the Red Sox always get lumped with those other teams in the Northeast.
But they do not put up the capital.
And they're kind of almost wanting to separate themselves from those big spenders. They don't want to be part of that group anymore. They want to do it their way. They want to do it in a more cost-effective way rather than just dumping everything into the market. Another question for me, Colin, why the rush? The MLB trade deadline
is in 6 weeks.
July 31st.
Oh my God, it's in 6 weeks. And there's no contract dispute. You don't need to trade him right now. Wait, throw him up from the market. Devers, you want to be moved? All right, we're going to make this public. All right, Devers is on the trade block. We don't need to trade him. Let's make that abundantly clear. But if somebody wants to go get him, come get him. That is not what happened here. That is not what happened here. It was a random trade. And you're right. Maybe there's something to the Red Sox not wanting to abide by the heavy pockets of the Dodgers, the Mets, and the Yankees.
But players aren't that. Players aren't money.
This is a historic franchise that has had historic success and that has a historic fan base in the historic ballpark. You cannot. The Cubs, of all places, the Cubs are starting to spend a little bit more. They're going to have a decision to make with Pete Crow Armstrong and Tucker and all these guys. They're going to try to spend money. They make moves to acquire Kyle Tucker. The Red Sox can't just bank on their young players to blossom this quickly when they're a game over 500, when they've won 5 in a row, when they're 8-2 in their last 10, when they're starting to play better, when Bregman's coming back in 2 weeks.
Yeah, if all the times to do this, you would have done it during his slump, right? Because Devers started the year awful.
And then he turned around. He's hitting well.
They just swept the Yankees. And the Yankees haven't been swept since, what, last year or something like that?
They swept the Yankees, and they've won 5 out of 6 against the Yankees because they played them last weekend as well. And they've started to play well, 5 games in a row, 37-36. I took their over, so I'm a little petty about this.
Yeah, same.
I took the 86.5 over. I like that pick. I don't know if I like it anymore because they just traded their best bat in favor of what? More prospects? There's no guarantee that that's going to work. There's no guarantee that that is going to work.
I have Red Sox fans who are still upset about the Xander Bogaerts trade.
And they let Bogaerts, goodbye. Didn't get anything from Bogaerts. Nothing. I believe he just walked away. I want to say that. But Bookie Betts, they got nothing out of him. They had all these great players. An all-time great team in 2018. I know it was 7 years ago. But
all those guys are still playing.
This youth movement, what are you, punting the season? Come on. It's the Red Sox. Have a little bit more self-respect for the fans who have a perspective of this team that they are an upper echelon of the franchises in Major League Baseball. Don't give them the idea that they're not. And that is what this trade does. You look more like the A's than you do the Yankees after a move like that. And that's not a good thing. That's Kate Chums and Colin Russo. Hard Rock Bet. Go get started today on the Google Play Store, the Apple App Store. Hard Rock's the best because you can put as little as $1 into a parlay or into Battle of the Bets. What Battle of the Bets is, it's a system that Hard Rock Bet has where each day over $250,000 in bonus bets are on the line. And all you got to do is pick a side. Take an over, take an under, take a left, take a right, take a team, pick a specific number. They come up with it for you. Just choose your side. And if you win, you get your cash earnings back and you get a piece of the prize on that big pot, which is over $250,000 every time. That's Battle of the Bets on Hard Rock Bet. And If you're somebody like me who was new to a sportsbook a couple months ago, it's got an interface that is the navigation is very simple. And you can find your way around the app very easily. Or if you're on the other side and you're a very complicated bettor and you want to put together an intricate parlay, you could do the same thing on the Hard Rock Bet app. Best part is you get $100 back in bonus bets if your first bet does not even hit. That's Hard Rock Bet offered by the Seminole Tribe of Florida. Must be 21 plus. Physically present in Florida. The wager terms and conditions apply. Considered by gambling, call 1-888-ADMIT-IT. Taking a time out here. We're going to bounce around a little bit. A lot of storylines to touch on. We continue onward here. Sunday Huddle on a Monday, presented by Hard Rock Bet on ESPN 106.3.
Punch right, Zach. 15 tiff scissors. Can it to 300 jet F stick. X has got a quick high corner. Be ready to keep attacking.
This is Sunday Huddle with Colin Russo, presented by Hard Rock Bet.
Sunday Huddle rolling on here on ESPN 106.3 with Colin Russo, Cade Chumsen. We're at the City Place Studios in downtown West Palm Beach. It's Sunday Huddle on a Monday edition, June the 16th, 2025. It's almost bowl season if we fast forward 6 months, and the 2025 Boca Raton Bowl is kicking off its 12th year. It was just announced. It is Tuesday, December 23rd at 2 p.m. at FAU Stadium down in Boca. The game's going to air on ESPN. It's going to have two of the biggest and best teams from the Group of Five. They'll battle it out for their shot at the title. You can go get more information today by going to BocaRatonBowl.com. Follow along for more updates on Twitter at Boca Bowl and at Facebook.com/Boca Bowl today. 2025 Boca Raton Bowl. Once again, it's Tuesday, December 23rd at FAU Stadium. All right, Cade. Let's jump around a little bit on ESPN 106.3. We got a lot to touch on because you and I haven't done this program in about been 2 weeks actually because Cade was over in Georgia. So because of that, we got a lot of headlines to jump around.
We sure
do. Why don't you take us away here?
Yeah, so I have got four or five more headlines that I would love to talk about today. And instead of us just doing a straight one through five, Colin, I want you to blindly rank these headlines based on their importance in sports, how much you like them personally.
I'll take my favorite headlines.
All right, yeah. Okay, so these are blindly ranking five headlines from the last week and a half or so. The Oklahoma City Thunder tie up the NBA Finals against the Indiana Pacers 2-2 after a 111-104 victory on the road Friday night.
Great win. I think I'm going to put this at three because I think there are more opportunities for bigger stories, but it wasn't series clinching. It was to even out the series. It wasn't to go up three, to make it one game away. Still 2-2, still anybody's series. Make that number three for me.
And these are headlines not including Devers or J.J. Spawn. I'm talking five new topics for today.
All right, good to know.
Let's go. All right, what do number we got? Two in our blind rankings. Joey Chestnut is back for the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest after being banned for one season in a Live Golf-esque way last year.
I think I'm going to put this at four because this is not deserving over the Thunder and the Pacers. It's an interesting story in the fact that I care about this tournament about 12 minutes every year on July 4th, and that's it. Is he back? Could I have told you that he'll be back 2 years ago or 3 years ago whenever he retired? Yes. We're going to see him probably come close to his record of like 70-something hot dogs. Nobody else is going to come close, and that's going to be that. And we're going to talk about who's the GOAT of eating, and then we're going to finish it off. I don't necessarily, it doesn't grind my gears as much as it could, but it's good to have Joey Chestnut back because he's a pretty marketable star for professional eating. But I care about this tournament once, 8 minutes every year? That's it.
Yep. Always just fun to have Joey
always
in the
spotlight.
Always fun to talk
about him. You talk about him for 8 minutes a year, and that's it.
Cool.
What's the third one?
Okay, this one's my personal favorite. I had a lot of fun with this one. This is Sunday afternoon. The ultimate announcer's jinx dooms Arizona in the College Baseball World Series. On Sunday, in an elimination game against Louisville, the Wildcats held a 3-2 lead in the bottom of the eighth. The Cards get some good luck and put two runners on with no outs. Then, during a pitching change for Arizona, the play-by-play announcer says this about the pitcher coming in.
And here comes one of the best relievers in college baseball to face one of the best freshman bats in the country on the other side. Tony Pluta's been nails for the last 2.5 months. Pressure-packed spot is next in Omaha.
During this declaration, the broadcast team showed a graphic saying that Pluta had not been scored on since April 1st. Louisville proceeded to smack five more hits and tally six total runs, ended up winning the game 8-3. Absolute cinema.
Oh, God. Now, I don't buy announcers' drinks as much as other people do, but there, as a fan watching that, you almost don't want to see any of that because sports is about moments and nothing's more romantic than baseball. You're drawing up a romantic moment for the other team when you lead in like that, right? I mean, I don't necessarily notice it in the moment, do you? When the announcers are doing that, no, you're 100%. Like, Jinx, don't
so,
say that.
No, 100%. So not only did I go to school for broadcasting, I've done this before in games, in play-by-play for other sports, and I was watching this game with my family on Sunday, and my dad looks right at me and goes, this dude's about to get shelled for five or six runs. Literally. Wow. Called it from the beginning. He's like, you never say that. This dude's about to get, literally came back from commercial break. Hit, run, error. Like the worst nightmare for Arizona. Unbelievable.
Wow. So you buy, wow. I don't know. I don't redo it as much because I don't notice it. Whenever they're talking about a play, you want to hear about how he's doing. You want to hear about how good he has been. And you want them to tell the proper story. But you're right. The second something bad happens, it's the announcer's fault, which 100%. Is the funniest part. Which is the funniest part. That is a brutal beat. You know, talking about, oh, nails. Tough opportunity coming up right here for him. Oh, he gets shelled. Too bad. That's going to be five. I can't put that. I've already set a precedent. This is a problem. I hate having one and two being the last two left. Oh, God. All right, so we're blind ranking headlines right now. That's going to be my fifth best headline. Kane, right. what is the fourth?
So far, your top one is number three with the OKC tying up the finals. It's 2-2 right now. All right, number four in our headlines. The Florida Panthers bounce back after a heartbreaking game four to take game five, 5-2 in Canada. They now have a chance to make history with back-to-back Stanley Cup finals with a win Tuesday night right here in Sunrise, Florida. And it was just reported this afternoon that Oilers head coach Chris Knobloch declined to name either Stuart Skinner or Calvin Pickard as his starting goaltender for Tuesday night's Game 6, according to ESPN's Greg Wyshynski.
First of all, this is number one. I got to get rid of number one. This is number one. I think it's interesting that he hasn't called his goalie. I expected that. I think both guys, it's going to be all hands on deck. They're going to go to wherever they can. If somebody starts poorly, he's getting yanked. So I don't think it makes as much of a difference. It's a matter of who is going to give them the best opportunity. And if Skinner goes in there and gives up two quick ones, see ya. Goodbye. So it's a very tricky spot and how they're going to operate at the goalie position. But the Panthers being able to go back-to-back here, winning 2 in 3 years, winning it back in Florida this time around like they did last year, that would be great, especially as the team who didn't have home ice still closing it would be quite a sight to behold. I'll be there live on site. This is my number one sports headline. I'm taking this one. Go ahead.
I'm shocked Florida has had so much offensive firepower. I expected a lot more out of that Oilers defense.
Has absolutely stunk. It's been terrible throughout. They've been lucky because they've had such good offense that has mitigated
but
that.
But they did all right against the Stars. Oh, that was
great.
The thing.
You're right. They were great against the Stars. And the Stars had an unbelievable offense.
Yeah, that was,
in and
that's
everything.
Where I was seeing it.
I don't know.
Panthers have come alive.
Maybe it's just about the Panthers. The Panthers are just too much.
This 100% has been about the Panthers doing great.
Three lines that just don't stop.
Yep.
And that's it. Too many players.
All right. Last headline. This is going to go into your number two slot. Back over to college baseball. Arkansas pitcher Gage Wood just threw a no-hitter against Murray State in an elimination game. It's the first no-no in the College Baseball World Series since 1960.
This is number two. I'm okay with this being number two. I would have been okay with this being number one. 19 strikeouts. In 9 innings. Unbelievable. This is a kid who had 50 strikeouts in 40 innings, and he put up 19 in one game. This is called what they like to say, a game of a lifetime for him, and he had it at a perfect time. Love a story like that. I don't care that it's Murray State. I don't care that Murray State is the outside looking in, the big underdog, the big Cinderella of the bunch. Doesn't matter. Murray State won the Super Regional against Duke last week, and they were scoring runs then. No hitting them is something to behold. Complete game. Absolutely love that. What a freaking performance by this kid. Unbelievable. Yeah. I was going through it. He had a 4.46 ERA. He's a good pitcher. 19 strikeouts. I didn't look that good. That's what I love about college baseball is it really is about the moment. And similar to what makes Little League World Series great, they only have a couple of games. Major League Baseball, you have a number of seasons to get back there. Try your luck again. Try it again. That's the beauty of like Little League and college sports is you only have a couple moments.
No, and especially this year when we saw there's 8 teams that go to the College Baseball right. World Series. None of the teams this year were seen last year.
Right.
Literally none of them matched up first time since the 60s as well.
No guarantee of you'll ever be back, and no guarantee that you'll ever get an opportunity, especially as a pitcher. You'll get your opportunity again. It's a sport and an age group that is built on capitalizing on your moment. That is a moment that he'll never forget, that teams will not forget, and that his team, specifically Arkansas, will never forget. You gotta love a moment like that. That is what makes college sports and Little League sports great. It is a immortalized moment for him. 19 strikeouts, unbelievable. That's number 2. I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah,
you agree with that ranking?
Yeah. No, I actually, I'm very impressed with how you went about this one. So your 5 blind rankings for the 5 headlines. The Stanley Cup Final at number 1 with Game 5 tomorrow in Sunrise. Number 2, a no-hitter in the College Baseball World Series by Gage Wood. Number 3, OKC has tied everything back up in the NBA Finals. Number 4, Joey Chestnut is back in the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. And number 5, the announcer's jinx blowing up the Arizona Wildcats also in the College Baseball World Series. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. I think I nailed that. And that's not the right way to blind rank. Just off of doing it, is you're not supposed to leave that 1 and 2 spot open towards the end.
Nope, but they were given to you right there.
They were given
well
to me right there. Nice job, kid, putting together good headlines that I could blind rank and, more importantly, be put in a good spot for. Kate Chums and Colin Russo here. We got to blitz the book. We got a lot to choose from as we close out the program. On the flip side, we'll also get into a little bit of how my half Ironman went. We'll do a little bit of that, a little bit more. We're closing out Sunday Huddle on a Monday edition on ESPN 106.3.
C31 smash, F-Track sneak, on one alert, the smash on one, ready?
This is Sunday Huddle with Colin Russo, presented by Hard Rock Bet.
Sunday Huddle, presented by Hard Rock Bet. Colin Russo, Cade Chumsen at the City Place Studios in downtown West Palm Beach. You got Game 5 of the NBA Finals tonight, 8:30 p.m. over in Oklahoma City between the Pacers and the Thunder. Really quickly, post-US Open yesterday on a Sunday, the NBA didn't think to have it lead right into Game 5 of the NBA Finals.
Such a weird schedule. This whole scheduling between the Stanley Cup Finals and the NBA Finals has been so whack.
They skipped Saturday and Sunday? Really? They had Game 4 on Friday night. They're not going to use Sunday night post-US Open on Father's Day when everybody's watching sports? Really?
Yeah.
I thought that was a misfire, too, on NBA scheduling. I thought that was an easy one. That was a gimme. They can do Monday night at 8:30? Really? Father's Day night after the U.S. Open, 7:30 start time, 8 would have been just fine.
Yeah.
That was a little...
No, but we were actually just talking about that in the office while you guys were on air for
misfire.
Russo and Rizzo.
Misfire. How did you not have that yesterday? But nonetheless, that's what the NBA wants to do. That's what they do. All right, Cade, you had a wedding, and you were on vacation with your wife, and you were bouncing around a bunch of different places, and... It's weird because everybody has a story like this, but yeah, you had a weird encounter in a hotel room, didn't you?
I did. So we had the wedding week kind of started on a Tuesday, and we were thinking, well, I don't need to go travel north just to come back. It was a weird setup. We were like, let's just take the whole week off. We have a lot of friends and family in Atlanta, Georgia. We'll go hit up Atlanta, then we'll drive back down because the wedding itself was in Daytona Beach.
Right.
So let's go hit up our friends in Atlanta. We always wanted to do a trip to Atlanta over the summer. Let's just do that, then we'll come back for the wedding week. So the first night we're in Atlanta, we're in the north part of Atlanta. We get in late at night because we had seen some other friends, and I had showed up to that hotel, and there were some things that I didn't love about it. The layout was a little interesting. The service we got at the front desk right out of the gate was a little annoying. And then I get to my room. It's not the cleanest. The bathroom's a little messed up. So something was just giving me this
something
weird
was
feeling
something was
the
off.
Whole night. And my wife was like, are you okay? And I'm like...
So she didn't sense this. This was just you.
No, she did. She could tell my face was scrunched up. Like, I was concerned about something. She's like, are you all right? And I was like, I might just be overthinking it, but something just doesn't feel right. So what she does, I lock the door using the normal lock. And then she was like, no, we're going to stay safer on this one. And she puts the... I don't know if you know the silver bolt thing
yes,
that goes...
Yes, the door stopper.
Yeah. And it goes... There's several different kinds, but the one that goes... above the lock, and it's that silver door stopper, right? So she puts that up, and she's like, just to be safe. I said, all right, no problem. And we go to sleep. Sure enough, 3 a.m., we hear the door kind of jiggling. Someone has card key access, or someone figured out that lock tries opening the door, and all we hear is a bang of the door stopper stopping the door from actually opening. So someone tries once, then they try again, and then they close the door and leave.
Wow.
And we're both wide awake, bolt upright in bed, and we're dead silent trying to listen. And so I look around the corner. Sure enough, that door stopper was halfway up because someone had been trying to open it. I quickly run over, relock everything, and we just listen. We hear a few footsteps, and that's about it. And so, based on bad feelings before we went to bed, and then 3 a.m.
reinforced,
right at literally 2:59 a.m., almost to the minute, someone tries coming into the room.
So somebody tried coming into the room at 3 a.m., so what was your next steps from there?
Well, immediately we're getting out of there. We already had bad feelings, so I got on my computer, instantly booked us a new hotel for somewhere else because we were going to stay there an extra 2 nights, got a new hotel. I stayed up the rest of the night.
Right.
I was like, I'm not even going to try to go back to sleep. Luckily, she was able to fall asleep to get some rest. 6 a.m., we're out of there. We go to the front desk. We turn in our keys. I was like, hey, just want to let you know this is what happened last night. First of all, the first thing the guy says is, why didn't you call downstairs? I would have sent my security up. And I had never heard of a La Quinta or any other hotel having security that they could just send up at 3 a.m. in the morning. So I was like, that just didn't even cross my mind. Whatever. And then he tells me about, I tell him about what went on. And I was like,
but why did this guy open? Yeah. Like, if you're going to ask him, like, well, why does he have a key to the door? How could he open up the
door? Yeah. So I was like, it's not just some random. Someone had a car key to access. This is the guy at the front desk at 6 a.m. His explanation, because apparently he was the overnight shift. He said that some other people on our floor had been coming in later at night, a little bit tipsy, a little bit drunk, and they weren't doing anything dangerous. But what he said he did was he sent this so-called security guard up to our floor to check on those people, and he happened to check our room instead, and that's why he had card access trying to get into the room.
What? Is that not crazy? I've never heard of that before.
Me neither.
Security, what, doing bed checks? What is it, summer camp? What do you mean bed checks? On what, making sure the drunk people are asleep on their side? Really? That is crazy. So that was his excuse. And now, you're on your way out. So at a certain point, you're just like, whatever, man.
No, he asked me. He's like, are you guys leaving because of my mistake? I was like, yeah.
That's it.
Deadpan. I was like, I don't need to say anything else. We're out of here.
Wow.
No, the wildest
thing. I don't buy that excuse at all.
First night of the vacation, too. We were off to a great start.
I don't buy that at all. What do you mean security going up with the key card at 3 in the morning to make sure what? That they're okay?
No, it explains the card access. But other than that,
unless that specific room, a specific room asked for that, a hotel is not doing their own due diligence and sending a security person up to make sure and walking, not only that, not even knocking on the door, but letting themselves into the room to make sure that you're okay. And how about this? If they were really checking on you, why did they try to open the door? It got stopped by the door hinge, the second stopper. And then they didn't call into the room, hey, this is security, just making sure you guys are
okay. That's all he did. Yeah, didn't call unless we slept through it. Again, we got woken up by the door stopper. So whatever happened before that, I don't know. But the guy downstairs would have been the guy to call me.
But then all of a sudden it stops and he goes, hey guys, sorry to alarm you. Any security guard would do this. Hey, sorry to alarm you. Just make it, if this was the case, if they were checking to make sure the drunk people were in bed, hey, don't alarm you guys. Just making sure everything's okay in here. I don't even know what I would say after that if I was a security guard doing this.
Such weird behavior by everyone's standpoint. We had no idea what to do.
Good move.
We had no
idea.
Yeah, no.
Good move getting out of there.
Instantly.
Good move getting out of there. That's nonsense. That's a nonsense excuse, nonsense situation. Can't deal with that. Get out of there. I can't believe that. That is ridiculous. And that is a ridiculous excuse from the 6 a.m. Overnight man.
If there's ever a sign from God that you need to get out of a place after having a feeling, like legit, I was semi-nervous about something. It's not that something specific happened that I was already triggered. I just had this gnarly feeling that something was going to go wrong. And sure enough, 3 a.m., banging on the door.
That's it. Kate Tums and Colin Russo, Sunday Huddle. It's time for us to bounce around a little bit. Let's put our heads together. Let's blitz the book, presented by Hard Rock Bet. Blitz the Book, said about Hard Rock Bet. Go down to the app today on the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store. We're going to take some picks against the spread. Cade, we're going to have four to choose from tonight because we got some action to look forward to the rest of the week. How are we going to do this? We're going to take one MLB game. We're going to take a College World Series game today or tomorrow. And because you got LSU, UCLA still to come. You got the game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final coming up tomorrow night. And you got game 5 of the NBA Finals coming up tonight. Let's start with the game 5 of the NBA Finals. Cade, is there a specific line, a specific take that you like in tonight's game?
Yeah, so the current line right now is -9 for the Thunder. I actually think they come out even more firing than that. And if you click on the game right there on the homepage, if you click on the game Pacers at Thunder, and then you go to the game specials tab over to the side, you can actually get different margins of victory at different betting lines. And I can scroll down to get a Thunder win between 11 to 15 points at plus 425. So rather than just going to the popular side and hitting a -9 at 115, you can bet them to just for 2 more points at plus 25. It's almost like a little bit of a boost on your odds. So I'm taking the Thunder between 11 to 15 margin of victory at plus 425.
That's a savvy pick right there, Cade. I like that quite a bit. Now the over-under is 224 tonight. I don't like that either side. I don't like that taking the over. I'm leaning maybe the under in tonight's game, but weirdly enough, I think 9 points is a lot. I think 9 points is a lot, and I think I'm leaning the Pacers here. +9, I think OKC is going to win, but I'm not going to fall for this bear trap again that the Indiana Pacers are going to roll over and die in this series. They strike you right when you don't think, right when you think they're about to die, they come back to life. That is what the Pacers do. They've done this whole postseason. I'm not going to doubt them here. I'm going to go +9. I don't think they're going to win, but I think they're going to give them a really good fight. +9 tonight, Indiana Pacers. All right, Cade. Let's shift over to the MLB. Let's knock out the stuff from today and tomorrow, and then we'll shift on and finish off with the Panthers. Tonight, you got Shohei Ohtani making his return to the mound against the Padres. I doubt he'll go very long, but they got a bunch of games tonight and a couple going on right now. Cade, is there anything you like specifically?
Yeah, I'm going to take this over on the Padres-Dodgers. Not that I think Shohei himself is going to struggle. I just think there's going to be a lot of scoring in general. So it's at 8.5 right now. I'll take the over. It's minus 130, but I think that's the safer bet right now.
You know, it's funny. I like how they're getting a Monday game on the West Coast right after with two good pitchers on the mound. But dare I say I'm going to see an under tonight in the Boston Red Sox-Seattle Mariners game. Get rid of your best bat. Get rid of your best offensive piece.
Fair enough.
And at Seattle, I could take Seattle to win here because they got Logan Gilbert on the mound. There's -1.5 on the run split. But I'm going to take the under on the points, on the runs. 7.5. Low scoring affair. This has 4-1 written all over it. In favor of the Mariners, I'm taking the under in Seattle Mariners, Boston Red Sox today. Cade, the NCAA has a little College World Series action going on. You got some games tomorrow. You got some games today. What do you like?
I'm going to go with the game tonight. It starts in about 10 minutes. It is a double elimination game. UCLA, LSU. LSU with a big win against Arkansas. UCLA beating Murray State by a few runs. And I'm in favor of scoring. So I'm going to go again with the over. It's set at 9.5. A lot of big scoring games so far in this College World Series outside of the no-hitter that we just saw earlier today. But I'm liking runs in Omaha. I'll take the over, 9.5 at minus 120, UCLA, LSU tonight.
Tricky game with Louisville and Oregon State. Louisville's plus 145 in this one. I think I'm going to take Louisville here. Plus 145 straight up to win. I was thinking about the over-under, but I'm going to take Louisville to win against Oregon State. That is tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern time is the kickoff, or the first pitch, I should say, of that one. Edmonton, Florida. This is tomorrow night's game. Panthers, Oilers. Panthers, game 6, a puck Stanley Cup clinching opportunity to close it all out tonight. Cade, what do you like?
I'm going to hit you with a little bit of a parlay, which is technically the same bet. The line is the Panthers -1.5. I don't think they go crazy on the Oilers to start. I don't think this is going to be a multi-goal game. This is going to be a slight margin of victory. Tight one goal game, but in favor of the Panthers. So I'm going to go with the Oilers +1.5, parlayed with the Panthers to win together. That's plus 250.
OT game for me and an over on the goals. 6.5. That is what I am taking in the Oilers-Panthers game. I think the Oilers are going to have to strike and strike fast. I think the Panthers are going to be respondent to that. And I think this is going to be an offensive-minded game 6.
So Oilers, hold on. So who do you think wins?
All right, can I be honest here? Okay. Here's my honest opinion, and this is selfish, but this is what I want to happen.
Okay.
I'm going to be in Chicago this weekend. All right, I'm going to be in Chicago this weekend. Therefore, I do not want the Panthers to win tomorrow night because I do not want them to have the parade on Saturday when I'm not here. So that's number one.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to root for the Oilers. I'm going to be in the building. I'm going to root for the Oilers. And then hopefully game seven will be Friday. And then hopefully the Panthers can win that. And then you could push the parade a week. And then I'll be there for that.
Okay.
That's my selfish reason.
You would rather... So let me just get
this straight. I want to see a Panthers win, of course. I want to see them win the World Stanley Cup. But I want to be there for the parade as well.
You would rather be there for the parade than the winning. There for the parade
Would I rather see there for the winning moment or the parade?
Now, I will say this. The winning moment is indoors. The parade is outdoors. And last year, it poured on them the entire time. Go ask our director of content, Brian Rowitz.
I also like seeing a seven-game series.
Fair enough. But I think the Panthers have a tough chance. I think the Panthers have a tough road if they go back to Canada.
I do see both sides. I like both sides. Honestly, I'm in a win-win situation. You either see it live and you miss the parade, or worst case scenario is if the Edmonton Oilers win.
Because if Edmonton wins in seven, Edmonton, you're kind of screwed.
All right. Panthers win in seven or six, I'll have something out of it on either side. So honestly, I'm not too upset. But I'm going to take the over on the points. I do think if my gut tells me that Florida's going to win and they're going to close it out, I don't think Edmonton has the defense to keep up with it. I think it's the worst possible time to have goalie issues.
I love how you just agreed with my pick, because if it's an overtime, it has to be a one-goal game. And if the Panthers win, it means the Panthers win. So that's plus 1.5 for Oilers. Yeah. Panthers win. So I appreciate that.
You're welcome. 6.5. That's the number. Okay. 6.5.
Oh, wow. That's low for what these games are.
I mean, if it's going to be anything like we've seen.
Has there been a single game that has gone under a 6.5 this series?
4-3, 5-4. I don't think so.
6-1.
Yeah, no.
5-2.
5-2. No, I don't think so.
That's a weird line.
That's what it's been the whole series.
Whole
series.
I thought it jumped up to 7.5 at least once.
Maybe for game five, but I don't think so. I do not think so. That's Cade Chums and Colin Russo. That was our Blitz the Book presented by Hard Rock. But I like our picks, Cade. I like our picks quite a bit. Do you think Shohei Ohtani's going to pitch well tonight?
I think he pitches well for 2 innings.
Yeah, I think they're going to get him out of there early.
Yeah.
I think they're going to get...
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
It's still a bit of a rehab start, but they need the arms. They need the innings.
And you cannot kill him first day. You can't. Because if you lose him...
But the Dodgers love getting people injured. So nobody gets their arms injured like the Los Angeles Dodgers. It's unbelievable. I don't know if it's bad luck or terrible management. Who knows? But Shohei Ohtani will be back on the mound tonight against the San Diego Padres. You got a little Game 5 action in the NBA Finals. You get the Panthers coming up tomorrow. We're going to be at Duffy's Inn Plantation doing our local programming. That's theoretically speaking, Russo and Rizzo. And the final hunt with Jonathan Zaslow. That will be all tomorrow at Duffy's Inn Plantation leading up to Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final. It's been Colin Russo, Cade Chumsen saying so long. We'll see you back at it this time next week, I believe, for a little bit more Sunday Huddle action. Yep. As we close out the program, appreciate everybody tuning in. Appreciate everybody staying aboard with us. Back at it tomorrow. It's been Sunday Huddle on a Monday on ESPN 106.3.
The preceding program was paid for in full by Hard Rock Bet. Advice and opinions expressed during this program were solely those of the guests or hosts of this program and not of ESPN 106.3 or Good Karma Brands.